Today is Tuesday, August 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. As the number of COVID-19 cases continues to rise around the world, Europe contemplates more lockdowns.
If you don't respect physical distancing, that disinfection spreads around very easily.
Plus, were concerns about the Hong Kong security law warranted?
It does reveal, again, the vulnerability of the Chinese Communist Party.
And where did Spain's former king go? We'll have these stories and more next. The Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker now counts over 18.3 million confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus. The statistical site also records nearly 11 million recoveries and almost 700,000 deaths globally. That's attributed to the virus. As the world continues to see the number of infections rise, lockdown measures are being reimposed in parts of Europe as fears grow of a second wave of coronavirus infections. European nations were among the hardest hit in March and April, prompting strict measures to control the spread of the disease. Some scientists say the measures were lifted too soon and warn that hard choices lie ahead. Henry Ridgewell starts us off.
A coronavirus test can be a painful experience. But in Spain's Catalonia region, there is a greater source of anguish.
It pains me that we could go right back where we started. It pains me. I think we had done well. Now I don't know if we are doing it well.
Catalonia has been at the center of a resurgence in coronavirus infections. Restrictions on movement were eased at the weekend, but several countries have imposed quarantine measures on travelers from Spain. Belgium and Luxembourg are also suffering a resurgence, with the Belgian city of Antwerp at the center of a new outbreak.
I'm a little bit older man, and I am afraid, yes.
People are more scared to come out on the street.
Local officials say the government lifted the nationwide lockdown too soon back in May, ignoring hotspots like Antwerp.
If you don't respect physical distancing, that disinfection spreads around very easily. And then it requests major measures to start controlling it again.
Such measures have been reimposed in parts of northern Britain, with different households once again banned from meeting indoors. Infection rates are rising, with an estimated 4,900 new infections every day across the country.
Early action is really critical. So if countries are responding, slowing down their reopening, making targeted changes to slow the spread of the virus, hopefully we can keep things in check before it kind of escapes onto that exponential growth pathway.
A wider easing of lockdown measures across Britain has been put on hold, with theatres forced to stay closed.
So we're going to have to make difficult choices as societies about the things we value the most. If, for example, our priority is to get our kids back in school in September, it may mean that we really don't want to have people in pubs and indoor restaurants right now.
In some parts of Europe, including Greece and Italy, infection rates remain low and tourists are returning.
The coronavirus is not something that greatly concerns us. We mostly look forward to relaxing and resting.
Germany has also seen an uptick in infections. In Berlin, around 20,000 people gathered to protest against lockdown measures Saturday. Authorities are prosecuting the protest organizers for breaking hygiene and social distancing rules. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
One overcast morning in a farming village in western India, a group of school children sat on the mud floor of a wooden shed for their first class in months. There was no teacher, just a voice from a loudspeaker. Reuters' Libby Hogan has that story.
With schools in India shut for over 4 months, children in rural areas have been cut off from classes. There's little to no internet connection in the hills of Dandwal in western India. But a group of teachers have come up with a creative idea. Armed with a loudspeaker, volunteers set off on motorbikes to the isolated hill villages. The students excitedly throw out the mat, sit at a safe distance apart, and wait for spoken school to start. In the absence of a teacher, the speaker blasts out a pre-recorded lesson. Kavita Chandal Yali is a Year 7 student.
The speaker arrives at 8 a.m. It is kept on the chair. When it is turned on, we repeat what the speaker says. We repeat after the speaker and narrate stories, sing songs, recite poems, and say English words. The speaker teaches us a lot.
In places like Dandwal, where telecom networks are poor and power supplies often erratic, some students have gone months without cracking open a school book. So the Spoken School Initiative was started in Western India thanks to the Digantha Swaraj Foundation, a non-profit that's worked for decades in the local villages. A group got together and started recording their classes 2 months ago. Since then, they've rolled it out in 6 villages. Parents say they are happy to see their children studying again.
It gives me happiness that my son can now sing songs and say stories, and he's getting into good habits.
Libby Hogan reports for Reuters News. The United Nations chief says the coronavirus pandemic has led to the largest disruption of education in history. With schools closed in more than 160 countries since mid-July, affecting more than 1 billion students. In addition, Secretary General Antonio Guterres said at least 40 million children worldwide have missed out on education in their crucial preschool year. He called for the reopening of schools once the local transmission of the virus is under control. U.S. President Donald Trump claims he has the authority to issue an executive order on mail-in ballots as more states plan to hold elections safely in November. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The president says he has the right to do it.
We haven't gotten there yet, but we'll see what happens.
It's unclear, though, what he could actually do other than issuing an order formally saying he doesn't like mail-in voting, which he's argued, without evidence, leads to massive fraud. He's now citing delays in deciding a winner, noting some states let ballots be received up to a week after the election.
Supposing it's down to that one state, that means you have to wait 7 days.
And argues a flood of ballots would overwhelm the Postal Service.
I don't think the Post Office is prepared for a thing like this.
His comments come days after bipartisan backlash after he publicly floated delaying November's election. Sagar Magani, Washington.
President Trump has said that the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan will fall to anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 troops by November of this year. Trump's remarks to the news program Axios for HBO came as the Afghan Taliban has said its chief peace negotiator discussed the peace process in a video meeting with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The Manhattan District Attorney's probe involving President Trump is not limited to so-called hush money payments made to two women in 2016 by his former lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen, according to a court filing on Monday. Reuters' Chris Bingham explains.
Today, ladies and gentlemen, a court filing from Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance on Monday revealed that his investigation into U.S. President Donald Trump is not limited to hush money payments to a porn star and a Playboy model. It also focuses on, quote, alleged insurance and bank fraud by the Trump Organization and its officers, among other things. The disclosure from Vance came in a federal court filing seeking to dismiss Trump's challenge to a subpoena for 8 years of his personal and corporate tax records, which Vance said on Monday was part of an investigation of, quote, possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct at the Trump Organization. Lawyers for Trump and the Trump Organization did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Trump had argued that the Constitution gave him absolute immunity from any criminal proceedings while he's president, but last month the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that he is not immune from state criminal probes and that the New York prosecutor can obtain the president's financial records. Last week, Trump filed a second lawsuit again seeking to block the subpoena, arguing it was, quote, wildly overbroad. But in Monday's filing, Vance said that argument, quote, rests on the false premise that the grand jury's investigation is limited to so-called hush money payments made by Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal attorney, who said he made the payments on Trump's behalf in 2016. Vance said in the Monday filing that when he issued the grand jury subpoena to Trump's accounting firm Mazars USA last August, there were public allegations of possible criminal activity at the Trump Organization dating back a decade. Vance urged the court to dismiss Trump's latest challenge to the subpoena, quote, without delay.
That was Reuters reporter Chris Dignam. And coming up later.
Well, I think you have two issues right now. There's a huge debate in Spain. First of all, regarding the legal aspect, because basically the royal family and the former king, they have immunity.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have proposed that early Mars was warm with vast amounts of liquid water flowing across its surface. A trio of scientists released a new study in the journal Nature Geoscience that disputes this popular theory. Instead, they propose the red planet was covered with ice sheets and that its valleys, thought to have been formed from free-flowing liquid water, were carved by water melting beneath them. The authors examined more than 10,000 valleys on Mars to determine processes used to shape them. Noticing the similarities of the Martian valleys with channels of subglacial meltwater on islands of the Canadian Arctic Archipelago, they performed a comparative analysis. The researchers suggest their theory explains how valleys could have formed on a planet further from a weaker sun than Earth 3.8 billion years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. China has issued arrest warrants for six democracy activists who fled Hong Kong before it enacted its new national security law. They include Samuel Chu, an American citizen originally from Hong Kong, who was a founder and managing editor of Washington-based Hong Kong Democracy Council, and Nathan Law, a pro-democracy activist and ousted lawmaker who recently fled to Britain. The authorities utilize Article 38 of the new law, which says non-residents can be prosecuted for acts outside of Hong Kong. The Hong Kong police and government have not officially confirmed the news, but Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, has said it was inconvenient to comment on the enforcement of the national security law. Now, to understand the broader implications of China implementing Article 38 of the new law, I spoke with Olivia Enos, senior policy analyst with the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, when I was on here before, we talked about, you know, the national security law as a hypothetical. Then I came on and we talked about it as a reality. And when we talked about it as a reality, we said maybe in the future there's the possibility that Beijing is going to try to make this law applicable extraterritorially. And now we're seeing that happen. So I think that a lot of the, you know, fears surrounding the national security law are being confirmed. And I think that this is something that the U.S. needs to unequivocally take a stand against. Obviously, this is affecting, you know, a U.S. citizen, but it's also affecting citizens of other countries extraterritorially. And we've been outspoken either way about how it has impacted the Hong Kong people who are located in Hong Kong. So I think that there's a really strong need to condemn this, to take strong action against it. Chinese law can't apply and shouldn't apply extraterritorially. So I think we need to be very clear and unequivocal about that.
A number of countries have already ended extradition treaties with Hong Kong for fear that this may have come to pass, that China would try to extradite its own citizens from abroad to stand trial locally there. Given that that has been taking place over the past several weeks since the NSO was implemented, is the arrest warrant more for those living abroad, or is that trying to be sent as a message to family members still within the Chinese borders?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's primarily a threat on their families or a threat to them. But I think it does reveal, again, the vulnerability of the Chinese Communist Party, that they find individuals who are talking about democratic freedoms fundamentally threatening to their rule. And so whether or not they're trying to target the family members of Hong Kongers or the outspoken activists themselves, I think sends the same message to them that, you know, ideas of democracy, freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, protesting and otherwise are not welcome in this new era of Hong Kong.
Moving forward, you called for strong rebuke for China for implementing this. But aside from sanctions and just policies being implemented, what can be done to, you know, really affect change in Hong Kong since it is part of China?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the big million-dollar question. And we saw the handing down of a new executive order couple of weeks back from the president that definitely changes specific aspects of Hong Kong's special status. So I think that the major blow has kind of already been struck. I think that there are certain elements of the special status that remain in place. One of them, and I think rightfully so, is not changing the peg on the US dollar for Hong Kong, which would really significantly harm financial institutions.
That was Heritage Foundation senior policy analyst Olivia Enos. Former Pope Benedict XVI, the first pontiff in 600 years to resign instead of ruling for life, is seriously ill, at least according to a German newspaper. Reuters' Adam Reed has more.
The paper Passau Neue Press says it got word from Benedict's biographer Peter Seewald, and that Seewald had seen the 93-year-old at the Vatican on Saturday. A Vatican spokesperson had no comment on the report, but according to Seewald, the former pope is suffering from shingles, a viral infection that causes painful rashes and is common among older people. He added that Benedict was also barely able to talk. In June, Benedict left Italy for the first time since 2013 and went to Germany to pay his ailing brother George a final visit, just before he passed away. Seewald was still hopeful of a recovery, though, for the former pontiff, who did say he may pick up some writing again if he regains his strength. Benedict was elected a successor to Pope John Paul II in 2005, but shocked the world barely 8 years later when he stepped down for health reasons, the first such Roman Catholic leader to do so in six centuries. Since then, the more progressive Pope Francis has been the leader of the Catholic Church.
Adam Reed reports for Reuters News. Spain's former king, Juan Carlos, has decided to leave the country. Earlier today, I spoke with reporter Nicolas Pinault via WhatsApp in Paris to get the details.
So as of right now, we don't know. We don't have any official communication from the royal palace, but we have two options. According to media report in Spain, he left for the Dominican Republic through Portugal. That's why the newspaper ABC is saying today, but we have no confirmation. The other possibility, and it's quoted by newspapers, La Vanguardia and El Mundo, is that he left for Portugal. Why Portugal? That's the place where he stayed for a very long time when he was a young boy, already in exile, before going back to Spain and take the power many years after.
So why exactly has former King Juan Carlos decided to leave Spain?
Well, you have the official part. That's what he claimed officially in his letter to his son, the King Felipe VI, the king. And he said that he wants to let him have full responsibilities. And basically, he doesn't want to embarrass him with all the allegations about him. And he said that he fully think that his decision is the right one. And he said that his decision to leave will enable his son to exercise his responsibilities.
Now, former King Juan Carlos is credited with really developing democracy in Spain, but he's also been linked to several scandals and allegations of corruption. So I guess my question for you is, you know, what are people saying in Spain about this, and what's going to be the overreaching legacy of his actions?
Well, I think you have two issues right now. There's a huge debate in Spain. First of all, regarding the legal aspect, because basically the royal family and the former king, they have immunity. And basically, he won't be prosecuted for everything that happened while he was in power until 2014. So question right now for judges in Spain, but also from some procedures in Switzerland, is to try to narrow down the period after 2014 for some allegations regarding contract that Spanish companies got with Saudi Arabia Kingdom regarding railroad big construction. And according to prosecutors, you have some money transferred, about $100 million that were moved from one account to another through foundations. And that's why right now the judges are looking at when he's starting becoming older, and then when his son took power, we started to find out some stories about him. You have this notorious story about killing an elephant in Botswana, and it has also a huge impact on his image in Spain. And you had also his love affairs, extramarital affairs that came out, that came to surface after he left power. And all of that, right now, you have this really mixed feelings about him, especially among young generation who didn't know, who do not relate about what he did for the democracy in Spain. They tend to see him only as an embarrassment for the royal family.
Nicolas Pineau reports from Paris, France. And you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by visiting voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There is no greater tyranny than that which is perpetrated under the shield of the law and in the name of justice, wrote the great French political philosopher Montesquieu. There is no better way to describe the repressive regime of Ramzan Kadyrov, the authoritarian leader of Russia's Chechen Republic. For this reason, the United States has imposed new visa restrictions on Kadyrov and his family for gross violations of the human rights of the people of Chechnya. The consequence is that Kadyrov, his wife, and two adult daughters are now barred from entering the United States. In his designation announcement, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. has extensive, credible information that Kadyrov is responsible for numerous gross violations of human rights dating back more than a decade, including torture and extrajudicial killings. These include credible reports of the mass detention and torture of LGBTI persons. In 2018, an Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe investigation into Chechen human rights abuses revealed that harassment and persecution, arbitrary or unlawful arrests or detentions, torture, enforced disappearance, and extrajudicial executions had taken place in a climate of impunity. Critics of Kadyrov have paid a high price over the years for reporting on abuses in Chechnya. In 2017, several Chechens with ties to Kadyrov's security services were found guilty of killing Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov. In 2009, Natalia Estyamirova, who worked for the human rights group Memorial, was abducted from her home in Chechnya and murdered. In recent years, numerous critics of Kadyrov living in exile in Europe have also been killed. More recently, Mr. Kadyrov, like many other authoritarian leaders, is using the excuse of the coronavirus pandemic to inflict further abuses on the Chechen people. Indeed, according to press reports, Kadyrov has threatened journalists who have reported on his government's efforts to scare people away from getting tested for COVID-19, calling those reporters enemies of the state. These additional measures by the U.S. government send a message to Mr. Kadyrov that his gross violations of human rights have consequences for him and his family. The United States will use all means at its disposal to promote accountability for all those who engage in such abhorrent behavior. the United States calls on the Russian government to end impunity for human rights violations in Chechnya and ensure that everyone in Russia, including in Chechnya, is able to exercise their fundamental freedoms without fear of retribution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.